The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We may remember and accept it. I vow to do the Buddha's truth, one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Nice to see everyone, and you're all hanging in there. I can remember when I used to do retreats, and if people left early, Reverend Massey said, "Are we still doing everything okay?" Anyway, I was going to talk today about one of my favorite, a very line of teaching I've always liked. It's part of a work by Bodhidharma, in which the two entrances and the four practices, a very short piece of work, but very concise with a lot of teaching. And one is adapting to conditions. And as he puts it, as mortals, we are ruled by conditions, not by ourselves. All the suffering and joy we experience depend upon conditions. If we should be blessed with some great reward, such as fame or fortune, it is the fruit of a seed planted by us in the past. When conditions change, it ends. Why delight in its existence? But while success and failures depend upon conditions, the mind neither waxes nor wanes. Those who remain unmoved by the wind of joy silently follow the path. And, you know, that's one of the things, because it's so much against the way people look at it, that I really like it, where those who remain unmoved by the wind of joy silently follow the path. And that's often because people, the normal way of approaching life is, I'm trying to grasp happiness, trying to grasp joy, trying to grasp it. And actually, from the point of view of training, what we're trying to do is realize it's a condition that's flowing, and it's going to flow in and change. And to not be moved by it is also what allows us to not be moved by when we have suffering, grief, fear, all these conditions we don't want arise. And often people don't understand equanimity. I've had actually people, I remember somebody who had been practicing a long time at the priory kind of goes, "I don't get equanimity." And when I thought about him, I thought, yes, you don't get equanimity. Because the person was always trying, had great enthusiasm, which is very nice when somebody has great enthusiasm and they love this and all the rest. But then at times they were depressed and, you know, God, I'm not sure I'm a Buddhist anymore, you know, that type of thing, because the feelings keep changing and we can't just get caught up. We have to be really caught up by what's good to do and the precepts rather than, you know, what'll bring a good result, and not just get caught up in how we feel. Because much of training is, if something's good to do, it doesn't matter how you feel about it. You need to do it. You may hate it, you may love it. So what? It's just a feeling. And frequently, if you just do it, it doesn't really matter, you know, what it is. And the purpose of equanimity is, how can we keep the mind and heart in balance so it doesn't fall into those extremes? And that's to open our heart to a spaciousness that allows both feelings to be there and realize we don't have to do it, you know, get caught up in it. You know, it can just be there. It flows into us and it flows out of us. Because an open heart is what we're trying to cultivate in our practice. Allows us to feel what's there, be with things that are there. But an open heart also lets everything out. You're not clinging to it. Something hurts, it hurts. but you let go of it. Often our suffering comes because we actually cling to the bad feeling. We keep it going by cultivating worried thoughts, fearful thoughts, and then the feeling kind of keeps going. Rather than just the fact that it flowed into us, it'll flow out of us. You know, the fact that something makes you feel wonderful, it'll go. I sometimes do this on meditation instruction. I say, hopefully if you keep meditating, you're going to have it at times feel really peaceful and good and, you know, joyful maybe even. Don't worry, if you keep meditating, you'll feel miserable again. You know, because it's not like you attained anything or you found this place that is something, because the feelings will keep changing. Nobody always feels good. Nobody ever sits down and, wow, I'm full of bliss. Because you have to accept that there's conditions that'll be difficult. And, you know, and really a heart that clings to joy and happiness can be brittle and rigid when it confronts the changes that it's not always there. Just like it can be hard to be with somebody. At times you love them, but what do you do when they're driving you crazy? You know, how do you put up with them then? And, you know, and the Buddha had something like, our hearts that are clinging to joy can be like a flower that is melting in the hot sun. You know, you won't be able to sustain it. You know, and part of adapting to conditions is whatever the conditions are, try to see it in a more spacious mind and heart. That just realize that it's something arising and passing. Nothing is fundamentally happening, you know, in a deeper sense. You're just doing something. And I remember very good advice. I remember Reverend Master Hario saying, he says, remember, you're always doing something. Just don't get caught up in what it is. It's just something, you know. And you're always doing something. Even doing nothing is doing something. You're choosing not to do anything. And, you know, and that's why, in a way, we want to allow adapting to conditions is just dealing with what's there, but realizing we can cling to it. It doesn't actually work. It's going to keep flowing out of our life anyway. Just like all our feelings have flown, will eventually flow out, no matter how much you want to hold on to it. You know, just like, and if you're not, and you want to just take the Dharma to heart, and just see the change, and just see what's going on better, and see the teaching, so when conditions change, you realize this is the nature of things. I remember talking to someone, and I've liked over the years using, I've used it in an article I know on that I wrote, and that there's a famous Buddhist contemplation. I am the nature to get old. I've not gotten beyond aging. I am the nature to be diseased. I've not gotten beyond having diseases. I am the nature to die. I have not gotten beyond dying. All that I find dear and delightful will vanish with impermanence. Okay, it's actually a straightforward teaching. It's obviously true. And I remember somebody who had been practicing at the temple for a very long time coming up and saying, this is why people find Buddhism depressing. You know, it's like, why, you know, kind of, life can be joyful and all these other things. And then I remember he faced, his marriage fell apart. And I remember him coming to me, I don't know who I am. I don't know what's going, you know, it's like he was completely thrown for a loop because he had to come across that. And now it was a shame, you know, the marriage fell apart, but the person could have died too. You know what I mean? This is impermanence. And we always want to be aware of the non-solid nature of everything we encounter. And that includes our feelings, our thoughts, the chair you're sitting on. It's like a thing of Ajahn Chah I always like. He would hold up a cup and say, it's already broken. It's implicit in the cup that it will break. Just like it's implicit in our bodies, that someday I'll probably have a memorial here. In all probability. I'm not rushing towards it, but but it's the nature of things that it's inevitable. And hopefully with impermanence, this will be permanent enough that it'll still be here when I'm not, but there's no guarantee of that. And, a lot of training is being aware, adapting to conditions, the eight worldly conditions, which is a teaching I find very helpful. One way of defining them is gain and loss, the opposites. Fame and disgrace, really how the world views you. Pleasure and pain, or comfort and discomfort. Praise and blame. And the thing people don't understand is naturally we're always trying to get the positive of the eight worldly conditions. In fact, I'd say most of my day is spent trying to maximize the positive side of the eight worldly conditions. Hell, I was just online yesterday trying to get a good price on something, and realizing how much time do I want to give looking on the internet to make sure I don't spend too much on something I ordered yesterday that I realized I could use when I really may as well get before. And through the miracle of modern life, I could just do it effortlessly as easily on my computer here. And, naturally I'm trying to not have discomfort rather than comfort. I would prefer if people don't criticize me and they, I want to be liked, not disliked. And that's normal. We all want that, and it's positive. I mean, we're supposed to want the positive. But to realize we're always going to get the opposite at times. You're going to be criticized. I even kind of, on one of the, on the Priory website, they asked me, do you want comments? And I go, no. I don't want to know what people think. Because it gets too much in the internet thing of everyone's opinions. And I thought, I'll bypass it. The Dharma, stuff is there. It'll be whatever people think. I don't want to know what everyone thinks. There's other contexts on the internet where people can comment and it's fine. It's not like there's something wrong with that. But, it's a place where people often vent very strong opinions. And, I don't need to hear them all. But to be willing to accept the opposite and realize whatever it is, it's nothing really real. And it's a useful teaching when I'm in a situation where I am getting a lot of positive feedback and praise. I kind of tell myself, just praise and blame, Kinray. No big deal. And if it's blame, that's fine too. It's just the opposite. When something financially happens, I just tell myself, just gain and loss. No big deal. If it's gain, of course I like that. Suddenly we're spending a ton of money on something I didn't plan. Okay, just gain and loss, and you'll deal with it. And just being willing to adjust our conditions so we're willing to accept what is there and realize in the end it's, we have to accept. And one thing people don't understand often about acceptance is that we still try to do what we need to do to bring a good result. I accept things, but I'm still trying to get the positive of those conditions going. I still both would like to be comfortable, like everyone to be comfortable. I would like to have less pain and want others to have less pain. But on the other hand, to be at peace when it's not there. And often when people talk about being at peace or acceptance, which is one of the themes of the retreat. They actually don't understand the fact that we still do whatever we can to have a good result, but we're at peace with the fact that often it won't, you know, the limits of it, and we can do our best and it won't happen. And we have to just bow to that and accept that. And often the way people think about things is that you should be motivated, that if I'm not upset, angry, fearful about things, I won't act. It's almost like people somehow feel there's some virtue in getting angry and upset about the news. Like somehow it's doing something, that you're hearing the news at home and being upset is accomplishing something. Just like the fact that people will sometimes feel like they're letting people get away with something by being angry, even though the person doesn't even know they're angry. You know, it's like somehow it's harming them mystically. You know, like, I haven't forgiven you. You don't know about it, but I haven't. I'm doing that. And from a Buddhist point of view, what we're trying to do is let go of our self-absorption. One of the most important things you're trying to do is realize you're insignificant. And take that to heart. What happens to you is not really a big deal. We can think it's a big deal, but really, almost everybody in the world doesn't view it that way. So you don't need to view it that way. And realize, and by not carrying that weight of the self around, if somebody else needs help, you can see freely, where's the real need? And help where it's needed, instead of thinking, oh, I'm at peace with everything, I don't have to do anything. No, if you get the self out of the way, wherever the real need is, you respond to it. You know, you may be tired and all the rest, but somebody needs help. Well, if that's the real need, you respond. Maybe you're tired and it's not really that necessary. You know, the need isn't that deep. Well, you don't respond to it. I need the rest more than helping this other person. But you accept the karma of the situation, and you accept that you're trying to see as deeply as possible what is really good to do, what'll bring the best result. And actually, your need, in a way, is not any more important than their need, than the other's need, except for the fact that you're stuck with you, and that's the need you're usually aware of. Most of the time, you know, actually, whatever somebody else needs, it's not really, you know, something I'm dealing with, so I'm mostly, you know, I'm eating, you know, I'm feeding myself, I'm not feeding the world, I'm washing myself, you know, taking care of myself, because that's the body I'm in. But that need is no more important, so, you know, you're not deeply enlightened because you're taking care of yourself, and you're not, you know, and you're not deeply enlightened the fact that you're, you know, but if you get the self out of the way, you'll see you're not that, what you need is really not any more important than wherever the need is. And that's part of the adapting of conditions, is not making what you want so important. You know, and so you can actually see what really matters here. You know, just like what will help others. Just like often people, you know, if you interact with others, what will actually be helpful here? Not what you feel like, you know, sometimes you're upset with somebody and you realize you want to vent. It will feel good to vent, but it's actually not going to be very helpful. You know, biting your tongue in that situation may be the right thing. And letting it be there until you can respond in a way that's helpful. You know, and part of that freeing with the eight conditions is that all those conditions actually aren't affecting anything fundamental. They're just passing through our lives like the weather, gain and loss, fame and disgrace, comfort and discomfort, praise and blame. Think of praise and blame, what people think of you. It's not very real, is it? It's just an opinion that keeps changing. I remember I was hearing something in psychology that was kind of very Buddhist, which is where they were just mentioning how people used to think people had personalities and kind of define things. As they study it, they realize that nobody has a specific personality, because in each condition, people can behave differently. Someone who's social in one place is introverted in another. Somebody who's kind in one place is unkind in another. And I remember reading the scientist kind of said, it's a bit scary, because when you think you love somebody, you have to face the fact that it's uncertain what they'll be in the future or even the next day, because nothing is solid anywhere. And you just have to take it on faith that you'll what it is. And if you think in relationships, hasn't that happened where you like something and then another side pops up and it's the same person? Because we're not one thing. You know, we're not, you know, it's not like, oh, this person is a good person or a bad person, a kind person or this. There's, in some situations, that's the way they are. In some situations, maybe not. You know, somebody will compliment me about something and I'll think, God, at times, that's the last thing I am. You know, it's that positive thing. I see myself not being that way at times, but at times, yes. And really the eight worldly conditions in a way help the way our mind of attachment makes the world by getting entangled in them and making them so important. Oh, I want, you know, people spend their life wanting to become somebody, to have something, to get exhilarated, to enjoy something. I remember reading about like a famous rock climber who actually only felt alive when he was risking his life climbing. You know, he just wanted that feeling. Rather than just learning, it's just the feeling. You know, he didn't have to be almost dying to feel alive. But you can set it up any way you want. And when the mind doesn't understand the non-substantial nature of the eight worldly conditions, you get entangled with them. You make them important. Just like the way we've all made what other people think of us important. That's entanglement in praise and blame. Why does it matter to you so much what someone thinks of you? And it's worth noting what they think of you, because it gives you feedback on yourself. Somebody's upset with me. I do want to look at what's going on. Why are they upset with me? But I'm trying not to take possession of it like, oh, I'm bad or I'm good or it means something about who I am. It just means that's maybe not a good, I may have made a mistake. I may have done something wrong. I may have been whatever it is. But I'm trying not to make it me. Or as I said, the Buddha said the most direct way to enlightenment is nothing is me and nothing is mine. You know, just realizing that everything is just a condition passing through you. And to say, then what am I? That's why there's no self in Buddhism. There isn't something solid there. You know, actually, just look at that body. It's 85% water or something like that, 80% water at least. You're a bag of fluid. And to understand suffering, we have to understand what's flowing through our life so we understand the reaction. Because really, what's happening when we feel good, feel bad? It's a teaching for us. You know, just like if I'm feeling really great because I get praised, I have to really look at why am I feeling so good? Why am I making this so important? Because the reverse is going to happen if I get caught up in one. What happens when it's the reverse? You know, what happens when somebody criticizes me? The same person is upset with me. I still remember one of the first, you know, kind of doing something when I was a fairly young monk that I knew was going to upset Reverend Master Jiyu, but I kind of felt like, actually, it's the right thing to do. And I remember I just had to kind of have her be really upset with me, and then just realize, you know, it's okay. And she actually kind of recognized it and kind of stopped being upset and told me it's okay. And the heart that clings to these conditions becomes brittle with suffering. Things really, you know, it can't handle it. The same way as most of us can get enough, something can happen and we almost can't handle it. You know, it overwhelms us. Like, that hurt is too much. And the reason it hurts too much is we were clinging to something too much. You know, if you weren't clinging, it wouldn't hurt so much. If you cling to good health, bad health becomes a real problem. You know, if you cling to how that people like you, it can be devastating if people don't like you. Like, how do I handle, you know, how come this person doesn't get along with me? Or why doesn't people like me? You know, so it isn't doing it. And another way of looking at it, adapting to conditions, was Dogen. When he returned from China, it was common when he came back from China, from Japan, because it was actually in those days a very perilous journey. You know, the ocean sea between the two places is very dangerous, and actually the sea, Dogen was in a storm on his way back that almost could have taken the ship down. And he even had a vision of Avalokiteshvara calming the waters. But he didn't really bring back stuff, you know, Buddhist stuff from China. And they asked him, what did he bring back? He said, all I brought back was a soft and flexible mind. And really can say heart too. And in a way, that's what we're trying to get in training, is that soft, flexible mind. And you can tell actually when we're not so flexible. You can actually feel it in your heart, like there's this solid, like a no, something fixed that resists what's going on. And a soft, flexible mind is that which can bow to whatever it is and realize this is what I'm being given, and you know, whether it's gain or loss, praise or blame, so what? And we need that soft, flexible mind so we can just deal the best with whatever we encounter in our life without making a problem out of it. Just deal with it. You know, I feel lousy. So what? Just the feeling. Somebody likes me, dislikes me. I'm having financial problems, not financial problems. You know, just realize these are just conditions. You know, take it step by step, and it is whatever it is. You know, just like somebody will be worried about money, and it's like, just try to be, realize if you take it step by step, it is whatever it is, and it's not a problem. You know, if you kind of think, what's my future going to bring? It becomes like, well, you have not a clue what it means. You know, just like I remember to somebody very nicely telling me, you know, he didn't set up a very good retirement very well, and so he kind of goes, oh God, I'm going to be living eating dog food. And I kind of said, well, first of all, rice and beans are cheaper. And is it really so bad to eat rice and beans? It's like, and plus you don't know, and the person's around and they're fine, and you know, then you know, there hasn't been a real problem and in their retirement, and because you don't really know what it'll face. You could die before it becomes relevant. You know, just like I've known people who seem to be looking forward to their retirement forever, and then they get bad health and they can't even enjoy their retirement. It's like, it wasn't good to live for thinking, oh, I'll be really happy when I retire. Because you don't try to do with whatever it is right now. You know, and just like, you know, and it's like, and when you see something wrong, you just try to correct it as best as you can. And if you can't correct it, that's okay. It's like in the article I wrote, it's like, if your room is dirty, it's good to clean it. That's probably right action. But let's say you don't have time or place to clean it. I've talked to people in this situation. Is there really a problem that the room's dirty? You know, what's the problem? You know, if something's dirty, it'd be good to clean it, but is it a problem that it's dirty? You know, why are we making a problem out of these things? Just accept it and do your best with it. Because in a way we're trusting on a deeper level, everything is clean. You know, just an opinion of how we want things to be. Just like I've been in places that where I don't want to tell them to clean because they're perfectly happy with the condition and, you know, it would be rude to mention, oh, it could use a cleaning. Because to them, it couldn't use a cleaning. Those are just opinions in our minds. Just like with modern appliances, we can keep a clean that a couple hundred years ago you could never do because you may have even had a dirt floor where you lived and they'd had, you know, and it just meant it was going to be just a different level, and that's what people lived with. And and part of becoming aware of the suffering that we have, and just to, by accepting it, we start seeing better through the tangle that has made the suffering. You know, acceptance is needed just to see the conditions, just to see what are we doing? How are we making the suffering? What are we doing to make that? And then we start unraveling the pieces and seeing better each little piece that makes us have a problem. Each little way of things that we're doing, you know, and start seeing the karma better. Just like if you're somebody who's insensitive to others and hurt them, often you'll get the feedback of others being insensitive to you and hurting you back, because it's a nature of karma. If you don't trust others, you'll find that actually others won't trust you. You know, if you are cynical, the world will reflect your cynicism. Like if you think, oh, people aren't good, well, it's amazing, you won't see good. You know, you'll think, oh, everyone's selfish. No, actually, people are both selfless and selfish. You know, and when you look at for the good, it's all around you. And actually, if you look for the bad, it's there too. And, you know, so a lot of training is just learning to see what's going on and just trying to realize in a way this is all our practice to embrace it all, the good, the bad, the indifferent. And that frees us from being bound by it. And we're freeing by realizing what happens to us will be okay. You know, we will fall apart and that's okay. You know, just like I think I pushed a few buttons by just mentioning nothing is being hurt even in a school shooting of children. It's just birth and death in the end. It's nothing special going on. It's not to the parent, does it really matter that other children died? The only thing that parent cares about really is their child dying, you know, and it's a shame, it's all, but that's the real, you know, for each one, it's just the normal loss, and it's one of the hardest things in life to deal with is losing a child. But if you sit still, it's just still birth and death, and it's going on all the time. And to say, wow, dying in a school shooting is an awful way to die. I don't know. If a school bus crashes, does it really matter? The death is still the death. You know, it's not like it's, you know, you have somebody to blame in one. You don't have somebody to blame, let's say, if it's, a death that was just karmic conditions, like ice on a road that the driver couldn't avoid. But still, on a practical level, it's apparent. It's the same death, you know, the same loss. And the same thing you have to let go of, like the Buddha did, had to tell the mother who was carrying around the dead baby, and he said to her, and she wanted something done, and the Buddha looked at the mother with the dead baby and said, oh, what will help you is to get a mustard seed from a home that has not lost anybody to death. And of course, the woman went around and just heard a count after a count of people dying. Of course, in those, this was India 2,500 years ago. You know, there was, you know, without modern medicine, people were dying, you know, at all ages, all times. The lifespan wasn't that long. Infant mortality was high. And the woman actually had a recognition of the truth and, you know, actually became one of the first female. I think she became the first female arhat. So, that mother. And the more we fight change, the more we resist the way things are, the more we suffer. You know, an enlightened being is at one with their karma. You know, that's the only way you can solve suffering. Because you're never going to get all good karma. You know, we'll all have difficult karma. And in a way, meditation practices having us try to find the stillness and acceptance so we can realize none of the karma is binding us. We bind ourselves by saying, oh, this isn't what I want. And of course, we don't want the bad stuff. I don't want any children to die. But that would be, on the other hand, that would be like saying, I don't want, you know, winter. I don't want, you know, as a small child, I remember vividly thinking, why does it rain during the daytime? It should only rain at night so I can go out and play. I mean, I kind of knew the unrealistic nature of it, but the thought occurred. In a good world, it would rain at night where it doesn't impact me. Because rain would impact me a lot as a child, because usually I wanted to go out and play. And when we live demanding what we want, we live in our heads and opinions about how things are. And you have to realize what's actually happening right now. Reality is what you have to embrace, what's going on right now. The good, the bad, the indifferent. You know, don't think you want a different reality. You know, there isn't a different reality. This is what you were being given. This is a world we're in, the body we're in, the place we're in, the people we're in. And no matter what it is, this is the place you have to embrace. And this is how you'll find, free yourself and realize you don't have to be moved by the joy or the sorrow, by the pleasure or the pain. It doesn't mean you don't want the pleasure. You know, just like, you know, just like I'm, this was just before thinking about, what am I going to eat on my way back to Berkeley? You know, like these profound questions that fill me. You know, it's just normal stuff. And yeah, sure, I'd like to, I'll treat myself to something nice for lunch on my way back. And I care what I eat, but I also realize it doesn't matter. And if I go hungry, honestly, it doesn't bother me much. And if it's something I don't like, so what? But on the other hand, if I can eat something I like, why not? Just like when I'm feeling tired or something at the Priory, I'll sometimes, oh, I'm tired of struggling with something on the computer and all the rest, and I'll make something nice. I'll decide, oh, I'll feed myself something nice. You know? I mean, pizza doesn't solve suffering, but it still is good to do, eat. Or as one Buddhist teacher had a thing I liked, she says, there's no pizza in nirvana. And I thought,
I don't know about that.
The pizza has as much Buddha nature as anything else. Anyway, I think I'll, on that profound note, I can end the talk. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to Sangha.